Welcome one and all to the Squawker Talker podcast. I'm your host, Greg Johnson, and today it's a very special Olympic-themed podcast. We're also joined by a very special guest in the studio, Amit Katwal, senior writer for Sport Magazine and the author of The Athletic Brain, which is out in all good bookshops on the 11th of August. How are you, Amit?
I'm very well, thank you for having me.
No problem. And also making his Squawker Talker debut today, we're all very excited, it's Rory Briggs, staff writer at Squawker. Yes. How are you doing, Rory?
Good, it's lovely to be here.
It's lovely to have you.
Finally.
It's great to have him.
It is. And of course, regular James McManus. How are you doing, James?
Hello.
It's the eve of the season. It's the eve of the Olympic Games. Olympic football, it gets a bit of a bad rap, especially in the UK. Maybe because we don't have many teams that qualify. It was only really London 2012 for obvious reasons that we had a team there, and it was a British team rather than a UK, Wales or Scottish team. Mike Gibbons wrote a fantastic piece of Squawker today on the seven reasons why Olympic football does matter. Actually preempted the World Cup. It was an event in the 1896 Games in Athens. A lot of great youngsters have been through, from Messi, Ronaldo, Di Maria, Aguero, and so many great teams such as Hungary, Uruguay, all the great teams of the past. They miss the TV era, but they play the Olympics. So I want to ask the pod, where does the Olympics fit into football for you, and how does football fit into the Olympics? James, do you want to go first on this one?
It's a bit of a bonus, isn't it? It's a tournament, because of the under 23 rule, you're only allowed 23 or over age players. It is a tournament of discovery. A lot of the standard earlier on is pretty ropey, but I think we saw with the Euros, if you give smaller nations a chance at these sort of championships, does make a difference to their overall production of quality further down the line. You've got teams like Fiji and New Zealand don't normally make a big impact at major tournaments, don't really have the chances to. And it's just good. The Olympics is such a feel-good thing in itself. So have football there is pretty good.
I mean, obviously, you write about more than just football at Sport. You're obviously going to be doing a lot of stuff on the Olympics. How does football really fit into the Games? Is it viewed differently in other countries, do you think, than it does in the UK?
Yeah, I think in Brazil, for example, it's very important. But I would say that probably because it's not the pinnacle of football, it's hard to kind of get excited about it from my point of view. I think there are a lot of sports where winning Olympic gold is the absolute best. It's the best people in the world of that sport, whereas football is just not the case. You know, there are a lot of players that are eligible that aren't going. Neymar will be there, but will any of the other best players in the world really be there?
Rory, what are your thoughts on the Olympics? Do you think there is that lack of quality? Are you going to be interested in the Olympic events?
I think actually this year's is probably going to be more intriguing than, say, I mean, it was great to have Team GB as a team, which it won't be this year, which I think is going to be a big miss. But it will still have its sort of slight charm to it being in Brazil having to need to like get their final major, if a major trophy.
As you say, the Olympic Games is the only competition Brazil haven't won internationally, obviously of the ones they can qualify for. They're not going to win the Euros anytime soon. This comes 2 years after Brazil kind of lost out in their own World Cup in their own backyard, and kind of tragic circumstances in a way from a Brazilian point of view, getting beaten 7-1 by Germany. Neymar again is going to be the man they're going to look to kind of drag them on to this great victory. But can he do it himself? In the 2014 World Cup, he scored 46% of Brazil's goals. He's still only 24. He's got 70 caps, 46 goals. I mean, he's incredible, but can he do it solo, James?
I mean, I think it was on this day the other day of the Brazil game when they lost to Germany. Of course it was. It was in June. But the image that stood out for me during that game was Neymar was ruled out of the game, so David Luiz and Julio Cesar were holding his shirt up with his name on the back, holding it up to the crowd, like crying at the anthem. And it just looked bizarre. Like, what other nation in the world is doing that with an Indian player? Like, I get he's a special talent and like they're pinning all these hopes on him, but it just shows the sort of pressure they're under back home. They're going to have it again, maybe to a lesser extent, but Brazilian football from that moment hasn't really recovered. They kind of stumbled around with Dunga for a bit and crashed out of the Copa Americas very early on, both of them in a row. So, I mean, it hasn't really recovered. There's a lot of pressure on Neymar, probably pressure he could be doing without as well.
Mm. I mean, we're going to get into your book a bit more in more depth later on. But what do you think of that kind of like the mental load on players like that, especially in a home tournament with all the hopes pinned on a player? He hasn't even got like David Luiz and Hulk to help carry the burden. He's one of the overage players. He's the senior figure there. They're looking to take him to glory. Is this going to be detrimental to Neymar and Brazil?
Well, quite quite possibly to Neymar himself, that 7-1 example is actually one I mentioned in the book of the ridiculousness of the pressure on Brazil, you know, yeah. talking about the fact that they lost it on home soil once before, obviously, and all that. But there's actually some research that says that if you're like the star player in a team, you are more likely to miss a penalty, for example. Mm. So I guess the pressure, then he plays for Barcelona, so he's probably going to be better at dealing with that pressure than maybe some of the other players on the team. So he might find himself actually the cool, prepared person amongst the squad that maybe isn't that experienced at dealing with that kind of pressure.
Roy, are there any players that you've picked out besides Neymar to kind of look out for at the Olympic tournament this year?
Well, I suppose being an Arsenal fan, there is Serge Gnabry there. There's Takuma Asano, who's the new...
Serge Gnabry, who is the Peter Pan of English football. Yeah,
he'll be around
for about 8 years.
So. Yeah. But yeah, so he's one to look out for if you're an Arsenal fan. Which kind of plays into why this year it's quite exciting to see.
Just for you personally?
Just for me. I mean, no one of us really.
I'm really looking forward to seeing Renato Augusto.
Mm.
He's one of the three overage players in the Brazil squad, along with Neymar and I think Weverton's a goalkeeper, which sounds like a made-up Brazilian player.
Sounds
name.
Like a town.
It sounds like someone's not saying Everton, right? That's somewhere near Grimsby. But Renato Augusto, he was always great on Football Manager and FIFA.
Mm.
Kind of broke through at Bayer Leverkusen about 6 years ago, never really kicked on, moved back to Corinthians, now he's just moved to China. Another one I'm watching out for is Jonathan Caleri. He's announced it. West Ham haven't, not even Jack Sullivan's announced it on Twitter yet, which they normally break transfers for a 17-year-old. But he's just said he's moving to West Ham. He's very highly rated at Boca Juniors, and quite looking forward to seeing how Julian Brandt and Max Meyer do at Germany.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Max Meyer was kind of like the uglier twin of Leroy Sané at Schalke, but just as brutal going forward. He's about 5'8" of just power. He looks a bit like Jordan Shaqiri-sized player, but absolutely rapid.
Well, he actually displaced Julian Draxler originally. Draxler was playing in the middle, and Max Meyer came in and was like, left, mate, go on.
Exactly. So they've got just the German conveyor belt of talent just keeps going. They just keep producing these identikit, fantastically well-prepared young players. Mm. It'll just be interesting to see how those two out wide do for them.
Amit, who are the players that are sticking out for you from the squads that have been announced?
Oh, God, you're going to put me on the spot here, to be honest. I've been so in sort of Euros and Olympics land that I haven't really had a chance to look at the football squads specifically. I've been all over the place, but I'm quite looking forward to seeing some of the smaller teams that you wouldn't necessarily get to see otherwise. So the likes of Fiji, Iraq, you know, those kind of stories that you never really get to hear on the main stage.
Mm. I think Iraq's left back is actually one to look out for, Ali Annan, and he plays for Udinese in Serie A. So if you're looking for a player to hang your hook on in that team, I'd recommend Ali Adnan. But also, I mean, Brazil, I did say just now that Neymar is the only one, but you look at Brazil's squad, they've got Gabriel Jesus, who's been massively linked with a move to Manchester City under Pep Guardiola this summer.
That's
in there.
That's going
to
happen, isn't it?
Yeah, he is. And the guy from last season who was linked with United massively, Felipe Anderson, very rapid, quick, direct attacker for Lazio. You've also got, you know, the another FM wonder kid in Huluan, who he always seems to go to PSG in my games. And Rafinha as well, who's younger brother of Thiago Alcantara, who plays for Barcelona. So they have got talent.
Isn't Gabriel Barbosa there as well?
I think he might be as well.
Yeah, he's pretty much nailed on for Juve, according to... When we did 23 under 23, I think the headline of the piece was he's not the new Neymar, he's the new Luis Suarez. And you just look at him, he's so stocky for a 20-year-old. And he's already scoring 20, 25 goals a season, which he just looks like the next big thing.
Unlike a lot of the people who've come out of Santos as well, in terms of physique.
He is he's more tenacious, I guess, is the way looking at it. Those are the players we're looking out for at the Olympics this summer. But just for a bit of fun, we're going to look at the if footballers were Olympians. I want to know, who are your players that would play other sports at the Olympics and why they would excel at them? James, I'm going to come to you first for this one.
We did this around the office the other day, and the one I came up with was Thomas Müller as being a time trial cyclist in the velodrome. So I thought, you know, he's sort of the right build, goes under the radar a bit, it's all about precision and timing and fine margins. That would be the Raumdeuter at the velodrome.
Raumdeuter almost sounds like a cycling term as well.
It's an event somewhere in the world once a year, absolutely. And probably one more would be Zlatan. You'd have to give him, he's well known for being a judo champ, so just chuck him in there, see if his mouth can match his actions, or vice versa.
I don't want to be that guy, but it's taekwondo, but luckily that's also an Olympic event, so it's all good. Maybe you can do both.
Yeah, I mean, he's arrogant enough, so why not make him double up? Make him
he can play
up.
As a nine, can play as a ten, yeah. Play as a judo, taekwondo, yeah. Do it all. I mean, who are you going to pick to excel in a different sport at the Olympics?
I'm going to nab the Ashley Young diving joke early on.
Oh, he went there. He went there. Is there anything else besides the comedy, or do you think he's got the kind of physique and technique to really get those entries into the pool down to a T?
Yeah, and he's got the smooth head for the sort of, you know, smooth nice, entry into the pool. The judges will like that.
I like very aerodynamic.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Anybody else that's caught your eye?
I guess he's retired now, but Akin Fenwick from Wimbledon would probably be pretty good at the old weightlifting, soccer kind of thing.
He is the strongest footballer in the world, according to now everyone, I think. Everyone accepts it.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's challenging him in an arm wrestle.
No. Is he actually a footballer? That's the question.
we'll soon find out. Rory, who are the footballs you like to see in a different Olympic event, and why?
There were so many for this one, but the one that truly stood out, perhaps not not quite in the sort of way you'd imagine it, but as the horse in an individual dressage, Olivier Giroud, of course.
Oh, fantastic!
But the surprising thing about the individual dressage is that, you know, he can use his hair to full advantage like never before. You know, before he's got that kind of that trot, that sort of slow trot, that prancing aspect to his game.
Plus, what is a saddle on a horse if not spectacular hold up play?
I suppose, yeah.
So, you know,
just goes without saying that.
It does.
He's... Cristiano Ronaldo beach volleyball. That's the one he'd want to do.
I had him down for the high jump. Personally,
he's amazing in the air, but I'm just thinking that little Top Gun scene. That's
with the shades.
Yeah,
I can see that.
Cristiano Ronaldo, last leg of the relay, surely taking home all the glory.
Yeah, very true.
On that note, I've got a few for you. Olympic rowing, Bayern Munich's midfield. You've got Thiago Alcántara, the little guy as the cocks on the end. Then you've got Vidal, you've got Javi Martinez, and you now got Renato Sanchez. A lot of power, a lot of, you know, coordination there. I think they can win gold. Well, what do we reckon?
Oh yeah, they know.
Does Steve Redgrave have to be worried? Could Steve Redgrave play midfield?
These are the questions you have to ask yourself.
And that's what we're doing here today. I know we're sticking with a Bayern Munich theme. Decathlon. Pep Guardiola said he could play in all 10 positions. It's got to be David Alaba, isn't it?
Oh, you were David Alaba. Keep banging this drum.
He's not had a good Euros, but he could have a great Olympics. That's what I'm saying.
He could, yeah. He's just got bounce back, hasn't he? He's got bounce back.
Bounce back ability. Yeah. And one from Nick English, our other Squawker Talker podcast, said... Synchronized swimming with Buffon, Chiellini, Barzagli, and Bonucci. They're so coordinated. They're so wonderfully got the same chemistry and in line.
Experience
in
that.
Absolutely.
Swimming team.
Absolutely. Definitely. And they are not going to, you know, they're going to beat in the pool. They could even do the water polo as well, probably.
I mean, you ain't scoring against them. Do you concede goals in synchronized swimming? Probably not. But
they won't.
They definitely won't.
Well, that's footballs if they're Olympians. I guess the only way to go from here is to take a more serious note. And actually talk about neuroscience in football, in sport, with Amit and his fantastic book, The Athletic Brain. As I said, it's out on the 11th of August, all good bookshops. And we've got some quite great questions to not interrogate you on, but, you know, just to open up, to try and find out the kind of mysteries of the mental side of elite sport. Just to kick us off, how much is elite sport about the mentality rather than maybe the technique and physique? Because, I mean, I guess once you get to a certain level, everyone's kind of rocking the same level of abilities, aren't they?
Yeah, so if you look at the elite level of sport, everyone's maxed out on kind of nutrition and physicality. But, you know, the best player in the world is, you know, a short Argentinian guy who had to have injections to even get up to the height that he is now to play football. And so it's all mental. You know, the best players in the world are people that can make decisions quicker, people that can see out the right paths more quickly than other people. And even, you know, the actual skill, the technique of controlling a ball all comes from your brain. It's not from your muscles. It's from your head.
And do you think that's one side of maybe... British or English football that's not been looked at to the depth it should be? We always hear that, you know, especially football in this side of the channel, it's quite, you know, insular looking, a bit conservative. They don't like new ideas, or at least that's the kind of caricature from decades gone by. Is neuroscience in vogue in UK football, or is there still a bit of ground to be made up?
Yeah, I think there is a bit of ground to be made up. A few clubs have kind of experimented with it, looked into things. Manchester United dabbled briefly in sort of vision training and things like that, you know, training players' peripheral vision to kind of help them see. I think this is actually after the whole grey kit fiasco in the 90s. They kind of brought in this specialist to kind of help train their vision. But yeah, sports teams are generally quite conservative. They're only really now embracing sports psychology generally. Like England have only just kind of hired like a full-time kind of sports psychologist to help them out with the mental side of things.
Just a decade after Glenn Hoddle hired like a soothsayer and things like that.
No crystal balls anymore. No. But, But you know, so other countries are probably a little bit further ahead. Germany are quite far ahead with this kind of thing. Mm. I went to Hoffenheim and spoke to some of the guys there, and they're like, yeah, miles ahead of England. Anyone in England, really.
Yeah.
Which is not surprising, perhaps.
And what do you think of the benefits that footballers and football teams can get out of embracing the neuroscientific side of the game?
Well, there is a few things. So one thing is to kind of make your training more efficient. So at Hoffenheim and at Dortmund, they've got the football nought, which is a square room, not dissimilar to this room, but slightly bigger.
Less warm as well, maybe.
Yeah, yeah. although you do still work up a sweat. You stand in this 14-metre by 14-metre room, and there's ball machines all around the outside, and they fire footballs at you, and you have to control it and pass it through a target. And basically what it does is it lets you get as many passes in 15 minutes as you would in a week of normal training. So it's all about making training more efficient and basically training the neural pathways that you need to control passes better or make passes better, and you just kind of build it up like that. But this isn't a new idea, it's just that the technology is new. So futsal, for example, one of the reasons that Brazilians are so good at football is because they play futsal from a very early age, and in futsal you get, I think, 6 times as many touches of the ball as you would in a normal football match.
Right, okay.
So you're constantly on the ball, you're constantly learning, and 10 years of playing futsal, your brain will be trained much better than 10 years of playing 11-a-side football, where you're just clogging up and down the left wing waiting for someone to pass to you.
So is it almost like muscle memory?
Yeah, but except muscle memory is in your head.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so muscle memory is in the strength of the connections in your brain and how insulated they are. So when you train these connections, a substance wraps around the neurons in your brain, almost like plastic insulation around a copper wire. It's like changing it from dial-up to broadband, and it makes it faster, it makes it stronger, and it makes it kind of better, basically.
Yeah. Fantastic. Guys, have you got any questions for Amit?
I mean, I've always wondered, do other sort of conditions that a player may have affect how quickly their brain would function? So say a player has a heart condition, would that affect whether he can reach the top in terms of neuroscience?
It could, in theory, if you can't get enough oxygen to your brain quickly enough, but then I think that would probably affect you in other ways before it affected your mental side, from that point of view. But actually, what you find is that football players are actually, they're really good at there's an umbrella term called executive function, which is a whole load of different mental abilities like memory, problem solving, flexibility, like inhibition, how quickly you can stop doing one thing and switch to another thing.
Mm-hmm.
And firstly, playing football kind of trains these abilities, actually, is what they found at Hoffenheim. So they found that after a year of training, if they test them on this range of abilities, after a year of playing football, they'll have improved. And there was a study in Sweden that found that the higher level players, so that they looked at players from the top 2 or 3 divisions in Sweden, and the players that were higher up were better at this range of executive functions. So it's a form of intelligence, right? It's kind of sporting intelligence, and it's quite closely correlated to kind of actual intelligence, actually. So this stereotype of footballers being, kind of dumb is just not really true.
Different type of intelligence, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
It's how they express themselves with their feet.
But actually, it's the same kind of underlying thing. So if they honed that intelligence in a more academic way, they'd probably be pretty good at that kind of stuff. It's just that they haven't trained in that direction. They've trained in another direction.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously you've mentioned clubs and it being quite clear cut. Hoffenheim using Swedish, and to have actual results. But have you found doing your research, there's been people who of trying to sort of push pseudoscience, things that you think that's not actually, in the way that Mike Bassett, England manager, people inside a ball going around, be the ball, things like these weird sort of things. Are they trying to crop up and take advantage of that?
I think there are companies that are maybe jumping the gun a little bit and maybe kind of trying to push stuff that isn't quite proven yet. But, the football clubs aren't going to kind of adopt technology if they haven't at least seen some evidence that it works. While undoubtedly there are some things that maybe won't live up to the claims that the people selling it are making, but there are other things that will kind of show the improvements that people are claiming. So it's kind of it's almost too early to say, right? It's because it's not been widely adopted yet. So in 5-10 years' time, if this becomes the norm and a lot of clubs are doing it, then that will kind of speak for itself, I think.
Just one last question on this. What would you say is the most surprising discovery you made yourself when writing the book?
I think I was surprised by some of the stuff around endurance and stamina and fatigue is really interesting. So the idea is you know, I think a lot of people think that like when you're knackered, when you can't run anymore, it's because your muscles have literally run out of energy. But actually, it's not. It's because your brain stops you before you hurt yourself. There's this idea that your brain is actually holding some energy back in reserve, which is why if you run a marathon, the last mile is often one of your quickest ones, because your brain knows the end's in sight, so it kind of takes the handbrake off and lets you just unleash all the remaining energy you've got, which I think is really interesting. And there's loads of ways of like kind of tweaking this and kind of messing around with this and then kind of taking the handbrake off and tricking your brain into letting you push for longer, which I think obviously has very clear implications for football in terms of extra time and things like that. And you know, when players are like literally out on their feet at the end of games.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. just to take it back to one point as we go into our next section, you're talking there about footballers being more intelligent than they're often given credit for. And football intelligence is, it does correlate. Sorry, with other forms of intelligence. We've had a question through from Twitter from CP Vorney, saying it's Rooney's testimonial tonight. We're recording tonight. The podcast will actually go out the day after the testimonial. So is it worth doing a bit of a section on Rooney, what he's up to, where he's going to go? And one of the things with Rooney that's always kind of, he's always been lambasted for, is his attitude off the pitch, his lifestyle, and also his mentality as well. So I wanted to ask, like, how much do you think the issues with Rooney are in his head, and how can he get his mind on the right track to become as good as he can be under Mourinho this season?
I think that's almost more of a sports psychology question rather than, you know, it's kind of more about mindset and things like that. But like, you don't get to the top level unless you've got the right mindset. You know what I mean? So I think a lot of it can be, you can kind of project an image onto someone. You can kind of think, oh, well, his head's obviously not in the right place or whatever. But, you know, you don't really know. But what I'm trying to say is that you don't get to that level. You don't get to play for Manchester United week in, week out if you don't have the right mindset. And I think maybe Mourinho actually will be able to get the best out of him just by riling him up or something. Maybe Mourinho will be able to figure out what kind of things get Wayne Rooney motivated. I mean, he's been shown to be a great man manager, so maybe more than Van Gaal or David Moyes, he'll be able to tap into whatever it is that gets Wayne Rooney pumped up and get him playing his best.
Obviously, the next big opportunity for Rooney and Man United to kind of see where we're up to with Mourinho, it's going to be the Community Shield against Leicester City, last season's champions. Are we expecting to see fireworks? Are we expecting to see Mourinho's United come to life as they did a bit in the second half against Galatasaray? Are we expecting Leicester to surprise us all again? James, are you expecting an exciting game or a bit of a going through the motions dull affair?
I mean, I think Man United's pre-season games have been more exciting than Mourinho would have liked. But I think he's inherited a flawed squad, and I don't think four players planning wise has been particularly great. He said initially we want four players. Everyone knows the fourth player is Paul Pogba, but they've signed Ibrahimovic when, if you didn't need him, if you wanted Rooney to play as a 10 because you got Mkhitaryan coming in at 10, then you're suddenly shoving a number 10 out wide. So he's got a very imbalanced attacking strength at his disposal, and he's almost going to harm Rashford's development. You can see it happening already. He's been shoved out wide more. And that's what you do with young players when you don't fully trust them. So it'll be interesting from that perspective. I think Leicester are going to be either fantastic or dreadful, nothing in between. They just keep signing absolutely rapid players. So they've not changed their style whatsoever. Yeah. They've just amped it up even further. They've turned it up to 11, basically. But I think the previous two Charity Shields, the defending champion of the Premier League's lost both times to Arsenal, City and Chelsea. So I mean, I could see United pinching this one and making that three in a row.
Rory, what are you expecting to see from the game? As clearly someone who's seen your team dominate the Community Shield, as James
the big one. The big one.
Arsenal, we won last year, but against Mourinho, Chelsea side, and they were pretty limp in that game. So, you know, you can't really see Man United having a convincing performance, I don't think. And also with Mahrez, what's going to happen to him? Is he still supposedly distracted?
Got a great goal in pre-season, didn't he?
He did, but they were talking about that after that match, and then, you know, are Arsenal really going to go in for him? Probably not.
To me, it looks like he's just angling for another big contract. He's angling for a new deal.
A bit like Vardy did.
Yeah, but there was actually concrete interest from Arsenal and Vardy. There's not really been, it's sort of been a few reports leaked in France that Arsenal were interested. And that's how an agent would think, isn't it? They'll say, this guy, they'll leak to a trusted source back home. You'll run this, the English media will pick it up. And it just spirals from there. I don't think there's really been any concrete interest in Mahrez. I think more than anyone else, because you're a bit younger, people are waiting to see if it's a one season wonder kind of thing.
Mm. Amy, what were you expecting to see from the Community Shield?
I think it's going to be quite. I'm always quite excited about the Community Shield. I quite like it. It's a chance to kind of see what the Hal Mourinho is going to do with the players he's bought, and presumably Paul Pogba will sign in time to just get off the plane and go straight to the pitch.
And pick up a horrible injury from not training, maybe. That's,
I think it'll be interesting to see what Leicester are like without Kante, because I think he actually gave them kind of a security net. They kind of could bomb forward safer in the knowledge that, you know, he was there to kind of mop it up if things went wrong. So without him and with, you know, with the new signing in place, Mendy, I wonder whether they'll be able to go forward with the same sort of reckless abandon, or whether Mourinho will have cracked out how to, you know, will teams approach Leicester in a different way this season now that they know what they're about?
I mean, look at the stats. Nampalas, he doesn't look like another Kante, not like for like. He's almost like more like another drink water. So I don't know if they're going to go for a slightly different approach through the middle, and then, as you say, just throw even more pace up forward to almost have a deterrent for other teams to try and probe that part of their team. But it's going to be fascinating to see how Ranieri moves it on. Although he has just said he's going to try and give Schmeichel another a brand new big deal, having already signed Ron Robert Zieler. So is he going to go back to being the tinker man? Are we going to start seeing like two players in every position rotated with Ranieri?
I don't think he's not reinforced to the back four whatsoever. Has
no,
he?
No.
He's kind of kept faith with Huth and Morgan and the fullback pairing. So I think it was interesting he didn't go for an upgrade on Danny Simpson. I think that would have been something I'd have done if I was Ranieri.
I think everybody said that after the season. Like, they're going to do anything for the Champions League, get a new Simpson.
Good to get over the line with him and win something, but I mean, you need an upgrade. They've just added like pace and width, which they already had. So they've not changed their style. They've not compromised whatsoever. I think teams will have worked them out a bit. I think it was hard to battle against that momentum last season. The tide and the willingness of everyone behind them, it was kind of like you were fighting fate at the same time as Riyad Mahrez and Jamie Vardy running at you. But I mean, I still think they'll do fairly well this season. A lot of people are predicting bottom half, 10th or so. I think they'll finish top six.
Fair enough. Any predictions? Let's have some predictions for the Community Shield.
Yeah.
Are you all going for United win, or any thoughts?
I'm going 3-1 Man United.
Ooh. Amit?
I think that it will be 3-2 United.
Rory? Yeah, 2-0 United.
Oh, yeah. All a bit different, all kind of similar. Because it's Olympic special, I thought we'd end very briefly on West Ham, technically the Olympic club. They're now in the Olympic Stadium. They've made some interesting moves this summer. Sofyan Feghouli, Gökhan Torun on loan from Besiktas, and potentially Andre Ayew coming in from Swansea as well. I mean, they're all pretty nice to watch wingers. They do great things with the ball. Is Bilic shooting to try and justify them moving into the Olympic Stadium, or are they kind of going to let the side down by proving last season was a bit of a fluke? What do you reckon, Amit?
I was really impressed by West Ham last season. Actually, I think their best signing might just be keeping Payet, because, you know, he was absolutely crucial to the way they play with the set pieces and everything like that. I think they need to draw the crowds. So maybe that's been a factor, actually, because if you're not playing exciting football, people aren't going to go and come and watch you at the Olympic Stadium, no matter how much you lower the ticket prices. So maybe that's been a factor in the signings that he's made. They need to play the West Ham way, in inverted commas, because if that even exists, but that's kind of what they need to do to kind of fill that stadium.
James, Sam Allardyce just walked in there. That was straight out of Sam Allardyce.
Absolutely. They've also sold James Tompkins as well this summer, and there haven't been many defensive reinforcements, I don't think. So do you think it's going to be a stick case of style over substance, or do you reckon there's still a grittiness that Bilic will bring to his tactics to see them through?
I don't think Bilic will allow the style ever to get in the way of substance. The reason he was appointed is that he was the next phase on and up from Allardyce. Mm. He was the substance, but he did add a bit of an edge. And players love playing for him. Gökhan Tor is a lively winger, came through Chelsea's youth ranks. He's like a fan favourite of Besiktas. I remember against Liverpool in the Europa League, he ran both games, and he's sort of been brought in as a utility wide player. Feghouli, he's always looked excellent at Valencia. And like Amit said, keeping Paye is absolutely crucial. I think the fact that they haven't signed a major striker yet is just because everyone knows they've got this money.
Yeah.
And they have two very mouthy chairmen in the media. So if they keep saying, we're in for this guy, that they just need to do it a bit quieter. And so Andre Ayew for 20 million, like, in today's market, isn't the worst signing, but it's hardly marquee, is it?
As someone, maybe not with the mouthy chairman, but are you listening to that description of a club not buying strikers and feeling a bit of sympathy, a bit of your own personal tragedy over what's going on at the Emirates?
Well, it's interesting because they were the first people to bid big for Lacazette and get rejected for lower than what Arsenal have bid.
Mm.
And at the same time, you're thinking you're now Arsenal are now sort of put in the same category of West Ham. You know, the London club. Who's the London club?
Do you reckon that could be the Olympic Stadium effect?
No, I don't think so. No.
They couldn't sell out the Europa League game. They had to reduce tickets to £5-10.
Yeah. But they sold it out. Yeah.
Well, that's legacy, I guess. That's the Olympic legacy for now. Hopefully they can build on it and they can bring in the crowds and they can, you know, really make a go of it. Because,
what a hype, man.
I know. Well, you've got to. If you've been to the Olympic Stadium, you know it's a nice piece of kit. So hopefully the team that are now in it, they can make the most of it. They can make the most of it. Anyway, that is the end of today's Squawker Talker. As I say, an Olympic special. Please do check out squawker.com. We've actually got a fair bit of Olympic coverage going on from the football. As I say, Mike Gibbons' piece on the 7 reasons why you should care about the Olympics is up there. We're also going to have the teams to watch, the players to watch, and also, I mean, if you enjoyed the section on Olympians as footballers as Olympians, there's going to be an article on there on the site soon as well. So please do look out for that. James, thank you once again for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Rory, fantastic debut.
It's lovely to join you.
It's like watching Rashford in the flesh, but in a podcast rather than on the pitch.
I've taken you all on, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's been brilliant. And thank you, our external guest in the studio today, promoting his fantastic book, The Athletic Brain, which is out on 11th of August. It's by Simon & Schuster, I believe.
That's right, yeah, published by Simon & Schuster.
Well, Amit, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And you can also read your wonderful writing in Sport Magazine as well.
That's right, yeah.
So, yeah, do check it all out. See you all again soon, and thanks for joining us.